Hi, this is Chris from PleasureMechanics.com. Welcome to the Speaking of Sex podcast. On today's episode, we are going to dive deep with a special guest, an old friend of mine, Pamela Madsen. Remember, you can always visit us at PleasureMechanics.com, where you can find a complete podcast archive and our online courses. Start your sexual explorations for free at PleasureMechanics.com/free. Today's guest is an outspoken, passionate, and irreverent woman who is not afraid to get vulnerable in order to connect and lead her community. Pamela Madsen is the author of Shameless, How I Ditched the Diet, Got Naked, Found True Pleasure, and Somehow Got Home in Time to Cook Dinner. She writes for Huffington Post and offers coaching sessions online and leads Back to the Body retreats for women all around the world. Personally, Pamela and I go way back. I first met her when she participated in the sexological bodywork training I was teaching with Joseph Kramer. Since then, we've collaborated in all kinds of ways, including an epic 3-month-long road trip, 2 pleasure mechanics, 10,000 packets of Zestra arousal cream, 1,000 vibrators, a few hundred books, and the one and only Pamela Madsen. Pamela, welcome to Speaking of Sex.
Oh, I can't get the grin off of my face. We weren't always smiling, by the way.
I still laugh about so many moments of that road trip. It's the gift that never keeps giving.
It was pretty epic. You know, people use the word epic. We know what epic is.
Yes.
It's exciting to be with you here 10 years later. You know, what's so interesting for me, Chris, is I had no idea what I was doing then. Mm. You know, I just knew I was on this journey, but I had no idea of the implications of the journey or where I would be right now. And I think that's because we have so few solid female sex educators in front of us. You know, you and I could probably rattle off like 3 or 4 names, maybe 5. I don't know. You want to go for 6 of female sex educators whose shoulders we stand on. But there's not many out there who are doing this kind of work. So therefore we are in the jungle on our own, you know, with this small historical ledger behind us, you know, with our own machete, like, you know, forging this path. As we go through our own personal evolutions, our health, our life, our family, our relationships, we're changing. We're living beings. Yeah. And so it all needs to come through us and out, and it is vulnerable. And if you meet a sex educator, Chris, this is my way to tell women all the time. You meet a sex educator who tells you she's happy with her love life, her body, her sex life. Run.
I got it all worked out.
Right. She's got it all worked out. And she's got the 3 magic secrets. Yeah. Okay. Run like hell because she's a fucking liar. Just telling you now. I dropped the F-bomb right away. If we've been in 3 minutes,
Pamela is
dropping the F-bomb. But I don't believe it. I believe that we go through portions of our life where we have higher satisfaction and lower satisfaction. I believe that all of us every day practice self-acceptance. You know, whether it's around how we express what it is to be this thing called woman, gender expression, how we present to the world in our physical luggage. You know, are we carry on or are we paying the overweight freight today? And, you know, how do we feel about that? You know, and the community. And I think the hardest thing for most women, Chris, is getting started.
So let's talk about that. How did you go from being a young military bride and a teacher for young children and a mother to being an erotic explorer? What was that path for you? In a few minutes or less.
Right. Obviously, I have a mental disorder. No. You know, it's a good question. I think the earliest memory I have of my own eroticism, Chris, was being a little girl. I don't know. Let's say I was 5. And I grew up in a big house, and it had a bathroom that had one of those double sink counters. you know? Mm-hmm. And I remember climbing up there and opening my vulva and like looking, like really looking as a little girl. I was so curious about my eroticism. And I did all those odd things that some children do and others don't. Like I found the carrot and the cucumber and I went exploring. As a very little girl, I was doing the vagina vegetable soup dance. You know, like, wow, this goes in here. You know, what does that look like? And I never felt like shame around it. Like, you know, I found my parents' book, What Did You Want to Know About Sex? But Was Afraid to Ask. It was yellow and it had an asterisk. And I read all about everything by 8 or 10. And then something happened. My sister, who was 7 years older than me, experienced an assault. She was sexually active. She got pelvic inflammatory disease from an IUD. She was in college and she almost died. And we were told she would never get pregnant. And I was about 15. And all of a sudden, I was still a virgin. All my explorations were just my own. Me, myself, and I, and the carrot. And at that moment, I boxed myself in erotically. Because I didn't want to die. I didn't want to get hurt. I didn't want to be attacked. I wanted to have babies. Mm. And I was so sure that my sexuality was so big that it would destroy my life. What's true is that when I finally became brave enough to peel back the onion, it changed my life. So I went through, you know, 20 years of being a military bride, of being a kindergarten teacher, of being an activist for fertility, and having a very lovely sex life. I had orgasms. He knew how to do the thing. I know how to do things, okay? But at 40, something else was going on, and I didn't know what it was. And I think it's when the fertility haze lifts, Chris. You know, there's something biological. We're animals, mm-hmm. right? And there's a period of time for a lot of people, not all people, but for a lot of people where our biological function just takes over. And it's like, gotta make the baby. Remember the donut guy? He woke up every morning, I gotta make the donuts. Gotta make the donuts. I was like, I gotta make the baby. I gotta make the baby.
And then feed them and clothe them. And
right, and cut sandwiches into little triangles and find the make baby food and make sure it's all perfect. And yeah. And then I was 40 and I was cutting sandwiches into triangles and I had this like Stepford Wife moment. Like, what in God's name am I doing? You know, it was like the fertility fog, the fertility haze started to lift. And it's like this, and I think it's also like the career haze where we're working so hard in this society that we live in to get somewhere. Build our career, you know, get married, have a baby, whatever the hell it is that you think you have to do. And it has very little to do with who we are as erotic beings. So I woke up. Sleeping Beauty woke up. She dragged herself out of her fertility haze, shook her hair, and began the next decade.
And you tell that story so beautifully in your book, Shameless, which really chronicles your sexual adventures and awakenings and how it affected you. What made you decide to get public with this? Because a lot of women go on these journeys but stay really quiet about it. And there's something else for you that made you want to become an advocate, an activist, a leader in this field. Why'd you write this book?
Well, some of us are born bridges. Does that make sense? We're born to be a bridge. We're born into being activists. We find the cupcake of our dreams and we have to write a review on TripAdvisor because the world needs to know about this cupcake, right? So when I went through infertility and I paved that path, I left being a kindergarten teacher to help others find their way to family or resolution. And
you went big. You started a foundation, went on Oprah.
The whole thing. Yeah. Did a study of 40,000 women around the world. What do they know about their fertility? Because I knew mostly our biggest issue in the society I was born into was biological aging, and that the societal lives of women and the biological lives of women were not in concurrence. They did not fit. So women were waking up at 40, ready to have a baby, and guess what? You were in perimenopause for most women. Not all women. You know, nothing's a blanket statement. So I was an activist, and then I had an eating disorder, Chris. I was bulimic. I used food to numb, and then I would go for a sexological bodywork session, and I didn't have an urge to binge. And years of trying Prozac and psychotherapy and talking about my relationship with my mother and my father and my great aunt Ethel never helped. But getting on the table and releasing whatever it is that happens, you know, there's a bit of magic going on with hands-on healing. And because pleasure is not studied, because there's no money in pleasure, you know, really. Like, okay, I make money at a retreat. You know, I guess I'm making money on pleasure. But there's no big money. There's no pharmaceutical dollars. They're trying, yeah. You know, with the pill for the guy and the girl and the creams and the whatever to make money from pleasure. But there's no big funding to really look at what is happening for people when they receive one-way touch. How does the trauma release? How does the healing happen through pleasure? So what I can say is that I'm a facilitator and an observer of this process. I'm not a scientist. But I know that if we give people the opportunity to immerse, I believe in immersion. I'm not a big one-off person. If we can get women or men or however you describe your gender or sexual orientation, it doesn't matter. Beings. We can get beings on a table and allow them to have 5 days of integrative body work in a space that is not their home. Remove them from their environment. It's very important. They will release and transform and have magnificent things happen for them, and it will be theirs. Won't be the other person's. It will be theirs. Why? I don't know. But it was huge for me. I stopped being bulimic. I stopped overeating. I stopped numbing. And I had to tell the world. And so I did. And I haven't stopped telling the world for 10 years. And then, of course, I had to create what wasn't there for me. Because, you know, if you read Shameless, Chris, you know I kissed a lot of frogs. And the world of sex education and healing is full of a lot of people who can put out a shingle, you know, and say sex educator, sex healer, sex whatever. And some of these people are wonderful. And it's a mixed bag. And me, in my hubris, felt that I had the integrity, the desire, the vulnerability, the understanding, because I spent 10 years as a client, to create a container for people who identified as women. And I use the word identified as women because we've had women come who have been transgender and have come and after surgery to explore their vagina.
So just to be clear, you're talking about your back to the body retreats.
I apologize. Yeah. I'm talking about my retreats.
She hosts all over the world in beautiful destinations and
yes!
Throw a beautiful party and healing sessions for women.
Yeah, that. Mm-hmm. And small groups and professionals. So anyway, what I'm talking about, who is invited? People who identify as women.
Yeah.
But women who identify as women come. Again, sexual orientation doesn't matter. You're there to have an experience with yourself. And women have come between the ages of 20 and 75. And the container is held very closely. So that there isn't, you know, we don't want to put hooks in women's hearts. Sometimes women can get confused when they're receiving pleasure from somebody, and it's the first time they've ever really received pleasure, that it's about this person who's giving it to them. And so that's not true. So we work really hard around boundaries and having women leave whole. And, you know, you asked me a question at the beginning before we started this. You said, but Pamela, how do you get women who feel like you were feeling when you were 42 to actually do this shit? How do you get them to do it? Do you still like that question?
Yeah, we just talked to so many women who feel like there's something bigger. They feel something within themselves, and yet they feel stuck. They feel stagnant. They don't know where to get started. And then the other edge people hit is they worry that they'll become insatiable, that they'll go down this rabbit hole and it'll never be enough. What do you say to those women?
Well, here's my mantra. The fear is normal. Everyone hear that? The fear is normal. Everybody has the fear. Okay, whatever the fear is, it's totally normal. I've heard it in every stripe. So the fear is normal. It's never going to be the right time. No exceptions. It will never be the right time. You will have to move something in your calendar. You will have to say no to something. You will have to disappoint someone. It won't ever be the right time. So it's retract, back up, not retract, back up. The fear is normal. It's never going to be the right time. You're never going to have enough money. The money always has a home. The word selfish is an ugly word used on women who take care of themselves. Mm. That's not my quote. That belongs to somebody else, and I love it, and I'm co-opting it. Mm-hmm. Selfish is an ugly word we use on women who take care of themselves. Okay? It's okay to be selfish. I wave my sex fairy, what does somebody call me? Their fairy sex godmother wand. And I sprinkle selfish dust on all of you. Be selfish. Take care of yourself. That thing that's inside of you, that restless, I call it restless leg syndrome of the heart. It's not going to go away. What will happen is that you'll feed it. You'll feed it in all the ways it doesn't want to be fed, because you'll want to numb it.
And this can look like going to a retreat for 5 days. It can also mean taking baby steps of taking a longer bath and touching yourself, giving yourself pleasure, going for a massage at a local spa. Like, there's so many ways of starting this journey. And so I just want to give permission to people to just do the baby steps and see how you feel, see how your life has changed. Because you and I both know when you dive in the deep waters, yes, your life is transformed. But how do we get to that place? What are the first steps?
There is a lot of good free out there. I mean, you mentioned in the beginning of this talk where you have free offerings. I've got great blogs on the Huffington Post and Psychology Today. I post every day incredible. So good, honest, supportive advice. I do free videos. You know, the word free makes it sound worthless somehow. What I like to say is it's my pleasure to offer you education that's accessible.
Yes.
And no, you don't have to pay for it. You know, it's not like a bowl of free peppermint candies, you know, that you can take or not take, you know, as you leave the Chinese restaurant. these offerings that you offer, with pleasure and as a resource and as a mission of hope and support, do not cost money. But they do require a desire, a willingness, you know, and so that is available. So, you know, reading books, I like personally to refer people to the book by Naomi Wolf, Vagina, because it's one of the few books that have a scientific base that talks about the work that, you and I, pleasure mechanics, so believe in, which is the somatic work. At some point, you know, you don't need to do anything, right? You can sit home with your cupcake and Netflix, right? Nobody needs. But at some point you might decide that we're right. The fear is normal. There's never going to be a right time. There's never going to be enough money, and you need to do it anyway. And what you can learn from is, so if I use my own retreats as an example, I've had 27 sold-out retreats in 4 years with a 98% success rate. Mm-hmm. Not success rate, a 98% return rate. Because the women come to a certain place and they go, oh my God, this is me. I need to know what else there is.
Yep.
So do they become insatiable? Oh, I hope so. I hope that they become insatiable for what truly fills them up. Mm-hmm. Not for what. We can become insatiable for alcohol. I can become insatiable for the fucking cupcake. What's interesting to me is I don't reach for the cupcake anymore. I love looking at them. I do. I remember loving them. Once in a while, I'll have a bite. But it's not what my body wants anymore. It's wanting something different. And so, you know, the term insatiable, do you shop insatiably? Do you gossip insatiably? Do you fight with your partner insatiably? You know, are you charging up your credit card insatiably? That word, insatiable. What are you frightened of, that you might actually become an erotic creature? You know, that my insatiable desire to explore my erotic creature has changed my life, Chris. Yeah, I'm not even the woman you met 10 years ago. I would love to take that car trip again. I want to redo. I want to redo.
With our baby in the car this time.
Right. It would be so different, right?
Yeah. Of course, yeah.
Because there's been such an evolution in all of us.
Yeah.
So insatiable. I hope we become insatiable for what fills us and makes us feel.
Yeah. And I'm just reminded that you and I and this growing community of educators, we wouldn't be doing this work if what was on the other side wasn't amazing. Right? Like, we're all pulling people into a reality that we both know from personal experience not only changes your life, but makes it so much better, right?
And
it's not just about sex. It's about your ability to love and feel.
Let's talk about that. That it's not just about sex. Or what do we mean by sex? So when I talk about sex with women, I mostly work with women, Chris. I have the occasional couple. That it's a joy to work with. And usually they're couples of women that have been through my program. So what do we mean by sex? Is sex the 20-minute, if you're lucky, sex act? Is that sex? You know, or is when we open to sex, we allow ourselves to totally open to our sensuous nature. Is it more than our genitals? Is it more than the flesh that's between our legs? Hell yeah. You bet it is. When you put, I'm like wanting to reach for something. When you put food in your mouth, what happens, Chris? Imagine I'm putting a juicy piece of fruit in your mouth. What is the first thing your mouth does?
Explores.
And it probably also gets wet. Right? It explores, it gets wet, it feels. Just like your genitals might. Right? So when we salivate for food, is it any different than, I use the word pussy. Is it any, if you don't like pussy, folks, change the word for yourself. My mouth gets wet the way my pussy gets wet. And they're connected, my pussy and my mouth, where all of me is connected. So when I'm eating a great meal, I'm having an erotic experience. When I get my hair done, Chris, you know, I got a little red over here. I don't know if you can see. You guys are, there's no video for this. But when I decide that it's time to take my makeup off and go naked or put on a new color palette on my face, I'm having sex. I can get so turned on by me and playing with my body and putting on what I call intentional clothing. Like how I pack my luggage is sex for me.
So you're speaking, just for our listeners, of the like Audre Lorde definition of eroticism is that which brings us life, that which makes us feel vital and vibrant, versus the pornographic view of sex that's about genitals doing a specific act. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you can have all of it. You know, you actually can have all of that, right? You can have erotica and you can have a spanking and you can give a blowjob or receive oral sex and you can have great food and you can walk in the woods and feel the pulsating of the vitalness of life through our bodies. And when I talk like this, what actually happens to me is I do feel genital arousal. Mm-hmm. Because I believe, and what I teach, is that our arousal is life force energy. And I teach something called Lotus Lift Meditation, and you can Google it on YouTube and find me coaching through it, and I'll show off. Can I show off? It was in Oprah in August. So if Oprah says it's okay, ladies.
Yes. You know, got the big O stamp of approval. I love it.
I got the big O for my Lotus Lift Meditation. Google it. You can do it. It's complimentary with pleasure. Yes. Okay? You can do this alone in your house. It's move arousal through your body and take it up and through and out and into the world. It's another way of expressing and allowing your pilot light to make everything hotter and more delicious around you. And nobody says it better than Lorde's.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm going to challenge you on this because our culture tells us that all of these experiences are for young women. That's when you're alive. That's when you're sexy. That's when you're vital. And as we age, we should kind of just wither up. And yet you are in your prime, in your midlife, and having more fun than ever, it seems. So what is this about? Like, how do we counter culture's assertion that women, as they age, desexualize? What's true about menopause?
Ha, it's a gift. That's what's true about menopause. Here's what's true about all this. I mean, this is what I encountered in fertility. What I encountered in fertility is that we didn't know about the biological clock and how it was going to affect women of today. We just use of today, all right? Because the women got the vote, women got admitted to colleges. I mean, this is all really recent history, right?
Yeah.
You know, this is not so long ago. So women started to go to school. They became doctors and lawyers, and they were ready to have a baby. They looked great. They were running. They were jogging, and they found out that they couldn't have a baby anymore because the sociological life and the biological life didn't match up. And we didn't have any history for this. We had no knowledge base. We couldn't counsel women to have their babies in their 20s and their 30s because we didn't know what was going to happen, right? Well, here we are with menopause. The truth is that I am in my early 50s. 100 years ago, I would be dead. Okay, I would be a granny in debt, or I died when I was 25 in childbirth. We don't know. We don't have historical reference for women in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s as erotic beings. Once again, this generation of women have the machete in their hands. And we are forging the path. And we are doing it in a society that, first of all, wants to profit off us and medicalize us. It's the first thing they want to do. They want to tell us that we're broken. I'm going to tell women that your vagina does not have to turn to stone when you turn 50. That, in fact, what can happen with this incredible cocktail of estrogen and testosterone that shifts and twirls and gets you feeling like, oh my God, what's going on in my body? That what happens is that you actually can become, you ready for this? The girl you were at 15 before you started menstruating and who was wild and free and touching herself and erotic and wanted to explore and there was no fertility haze and you weren't like, stuck. And I am in my, what I call my Renaissance adolescence. And when I was in my 20s, I had a orgasm. Oh, I'm too sensitive. That's enough. Thank you. That's what I thought it was about. If I had an orgasm, you know, I had fulfilled what I was supposed to fulfill. Well, now I know better and I can have 16. And, you know, you don't get a merit badge. But it's about allowing, learning to allow yourself to have pleasure, learning to be erotically selfish, learning how to give and take. These are skills we're not taught them. So you can stop worrying about getting pregnant. Maybe, you know, you can let go of, I hope will help you, let go of the body shame. And this can be a very healthy time of life, or if you're dealing with some kind of, you know, I use the Yiddish word imglick, some sort of chronic little problem. Okay, so you have it. You'll deal with it. You know what it is. You figure it out. You're a grown up. It doesn't have to change your life. If you have breast cancer, you can still have great sex. Your body may change. What kind of tattoo are you putting on there? You know, what are you going to do to truly self-express in midlife? You can have the hottest time in your life. I thought I had it going on at 15. Youth is wasted on the young. Mm-hmm. It's true. Now there's this group of people in their 40s, 50s, 60s. My mother is 90 and rocking it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. You know, we're looking for role models.
Oh, you're being that role model.
I am. I am doing my best. And I'm having a great time. And you can too. I'm going to say it again. The fear is normal. I feel like the Twilight Zone. You remember? Mm-hmm. Don't adjust the television set. The fear is normal. Won't ever be the right time. You just have to do it. You just have to do it. And once you do it, you're going to find yourself in a tribe of other women who are not hiding, who are allowing themselves to have pictures taken, who are creating videos, who are coming out, who are not frightened to be seen anymore. And they are paying it forward to all the other women too.
And if you don't have that community locally, you can find it online.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, and not all of it is expensive.
Yep.
You know, what I always say to women is don't say my no for me.
Don't say what?
Don't say my no for me. Don't decide you can't afford it. Don't decide you can't have this or that. Call me. You know, maybe there's some kind of plan or program, just like you have so many options at Pleasure Mechanics of ways for people to participate. There's lots of different levels of, and people have to go on their own journey. So, you know, our good old friend, Jack Moran, who wrote The Erotic Mind, if folks, if you haven't read it, please read it. He says that the erotic equation is obstacle plus prohibition plus yearning equals desire. I have that memorized. So find the obstacle that's keeping you stuck and eroticize it. Like, wow, how sexy could it be to move this obstacle? How am I going to move this obstacle? You know, feel your own Romeo and Juliet. Like, oh, I'm not supposed to have this. Really? Not supposed to have it? You're going to want it more. Like, really go into your own erotic equation. And that's going to really move you into the desire of having what you want. Obstacles can be sexy. They can be this goal, this thing that you want to move, or obstacles can keep you stuck. You know, how do you want your obstacles served?
She says coyly.
I like mine with pickles.
Well, you and I could talk for, in fact, we have talked for months on end while in a car together, traveling this beautiful country. So I'm going to wrap it up, but we will bring you back on and explore more together. So first, tell our audience where they can find you if they are ready to sign up for a retreat or want personal sessions or just want to find your book and learn more from you.
Well, they can do the really easy thing, which is follow me on Facebook. And that's Pamela Madsen. And verify, there's a blue check. You want that and you follow it. Everything is public. So don't worry that there's no room for friendship. I'm friends with everybody. It's all open. Visit backtothebody.org. Backtothebody.org. That will lead you everywhere. You know, it would take you to the retreats, coaching, my book, you know, videos. Everything is there. So go to backtothebody.org.
It might lead you to Hawaii. I was looking at it this morning. I was like, I want to go.
Yeah, baby.
That's what I need.
You do want to go.
Don't
yeah.
Come to me.
It exists. And that's half filled up. You know, we keep it small because to do this work, somebody laughed because they said, well, how many women? And I said, well, it depends, between 6 and 12. And they asked how many staff. And I told them usually about 5. And they were like, oh my God, that's better than the daycare ratio. Yeah. And you can't do this work, I don't think, with hundreds of people in the room with amateurs, poking amateurs. I don't believe in it. I have strong feelings about it. You need to do this intimate work intimately. And women need to be held with care, respect, and boundaries. And that's the kind of container that I know, Chris, you believe in. It's a container that you would need. It's a container that I would need. Why wouldn't we give this to women? So I'm doing the best I can. And you were a great influence on me.
So I'll say more.
Well, it's true. Yeah. You taught me the importance of the safe container. When I was learning with you during my sexological bodywork training, Chris was co-teaching it with Joseph Kramer. And you were always so good at drawing the attention back, drawing the attention back to the person that's on the table. And that was a beautiful lesson because we always tend to sort of want to sneak into partner engagement because that's where we're trained to go. And the gift is that all of the attention is directed at the human on the table, so that they cannot give back, so they can go deeper and deeper and deeper into who they are. And that's the gift, that's the healing, and one day I believe we will have the science. So thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's been a fun friendship so far.
Yay.
We've got a lot more to do together, I think.
I think so.
So thank you for joining me on the show. Let's bring you back and explore another cave in the realm of sexuality together.
Anytime.
All right. So we will link all of Pamela's links up on the show notes page over at pleasuremechanics.com, and you can find more there. If you have any questions, come over to pleasuremechanics.com/hello, and you can record a message or suggest a topic for a future podcast. We always love hearing from you. And particularly if you have questions about this show, we referenced sexological body work and what on the table means. And we would be happy to flesh that out more for you if you have any questions about that. This is Chris at pleasuremechanics.com, wishing you a lifetime of pleasure. Cheers.